Hi everybody, I'm Erez Harari from Sela Canada. I'm CTO of Sela Canada, and I'm here to talk to you about the continuous quality enablement and how Visual Studio 2012 features are can help you empower continuous quality enablement. So very often when we as developers think about software development lifecycle, SDLC, we tend to think about the this part here, development. Because we are developers and we think about development, but we know that when we think about the ALM, application lifetime management, it doesn't end up with development, because somebody has to think, let's talk about definition here, define. Somebody has to think through the application and define what the application would do, okay? What are the requirements? What they have to think about all the things that they would like to receive from that application. And then they have to communicate that list of requirements to us, the developers, as clearly as possible. We need to understand exactly what they want to achieve from the application, and in order to do our jobs and supply what they're looking for. On the other side of the development, there's the operations. So again, when we think that when we complete the development, we think that we finished the project. Because it's very natural for us to think, okay, we finished the development, we tested it, we've gone through development and testing, and we delivered the application and we're done. We're not done, because it could be bugs, more features. We're in a process here, and we need to rethink our next stage all the time. So we're not going to talk about the impediments in continuous value delivery. And the first thing I'd like to talk about is misunderstood requirements here. Okay? When we define the application, misunderstood requirements. So requirements don't always reflect the customer intent. Customers, we've all been there when we got the requirement list and we built exactly what they requested us to build, and the application is done and we deliver it, and they say, okay, that's exactly what I asked for, but it's not what I meant to receive. I wanted something else. Because they did not communicate the information exactly. So the solution would be to supply the customers and the developers with a tool that will allow them to express their intent in a more graphical way, something that will allow them to show and see exactly what they would like to receive from the application, and for us to understand exactly what they mean in screen-wise, field-wise, and flow. So with the Visual Studio 2012, we can use the new storyboarding tool in order to do that. We can create something that everybody can use, PowerPoint. We can create PowerPoint presentations that are connected to our TFS, and we can attach them to work items and get feedback. Get feedback from the customer and from the developers. We can shorten the connection, the communication cycle between the developers and the stakeholders, and then we can get the client feedback for, is that exactly what you wanted to receive? No, I'd like to receive something else. This tool could really reduce the amount of frustration that is that can be. That we experience when we finish an application and we did not supply what the customer was aiming to receive. But even more when the developers are provided with, let's say, a concrete list of requirements, and they know exactly what they have to build, they don't always know when the feature is complete. When am I done? It's not easy for customers to express non-functional requirements. They can try, but they cannot always express what they mean. And for example, let's say that I was asked to create a few features, and I decided that it makes more sense to squeeze these features because they are related to one another in one page. And then it really makes a lot of sense, but it pushes the load time of that web page to over 3 seconds. That's exactly what the customer didn't want to receive. And it's more important for the customer for that page to load at less than 3 seconds. So here I missed my target. So it's really important to get to a 360 degrees acceptance criteria that would be agreeable upon everybody. Every stakeholder. And it means user stories, requirements, product backlogs, and others. It's very important for the developer to know exactly what they develop. What exactly do the customer want? Not just a small feature, but the whole picture. So, in my... sorry, I went back. Okay, in my next demo here, I'm going to show you the Visual Studio storyboarding tool and feedback client. And if you don't mind, I'll sit down. Number one here, please. Okay, it will work now. You see my screen now. Okay, that's better. Sorry. Okay, so I'm logged in as a user called Annie, and Annie is a developer. And I'll start my Explorer here and go to the TFS project portal. It will take some time. And go to the shared documents. And inside that shared documents, you can see I have these PowerPoint presentation for our Fabric and Fiber company. So I'll just click the start here and go to the PowerPoint. First thing I'll do is enable editing, because PowerPoint is really after my safety here, but it's okay. And you can see here that I have a new add-in here. It's called storyboarding. The storyboarding add-in is all about creating a storyboard. And run the presentation. I'll do F5 here. And we can see the presentation. You can see that... we've created screens, and the customer said, I'd like a customer screen, and enter the name and the address. And then I'm not doing that. That's an animation, so we can create animations. You know, it's PowerPoint. Everybody can create PowerPoints. And again, would like to go to the dashboard. And this is how it would look. Now I have the support screen here. And, this is how I'd like to look on Windows Phone. And again, an animation. User would tap here and enter the name. And the password. To log in. So, and there you have it. Let's go to the agenda. There you have it. This is what the customer really wants to receive. It's a storyboard, just like every storyboard. Oh, we also have a toast here, running late, map it, so the customer also would like to receive a Bing map solution, and pan it and pinch it. And it will come here to the, to our website here, so I'll be able to see the what the customer was selecting in the Windows Phone. Okay, so there goes, that's all for our storyboard here. But now I'm going to create a new slide. I'd like to create something here, so I'll go just before the start and do a new slide. Now you can see Okay, now I'm creating a new slide and I'm going to use one of our templates here. So we have a template already for our website. And for that template, I'm going to go directly to my Internet Explorer here and go to our internet portal. And I would like to just grab something from that portal and use it with my storyboard. It takes time because it is a virtual machine, so I'm sorry for that. Okay, so I'll go back to my PowerPoint here, and I'll go to storyboarding and clip a snapshot, because I'd like to create a snapshot. So when I do that, PowerPoint just goes away and allows me to just define exactly what I want. So I'll just take this area here, and when I'm done, you can see I got it here in my PowerPoint. I'll just move it around and put it exactly where I'd like to put it, and now I have it. So, but it's not enough. I'd like to add a button. So I'll just go to the shapes and storyboarding shapes and add a button. And once it's open, I'll go and select. I can see that there are a bunch of shapes that are already there, and I can use them. So I'll just go to Common and grab a button here. Okay. Now this button doesn't look exactly as I want it to look, so I'll just go to the formatting tool and change the fill. Okay, now this button looks quite nice, so I'd like to add that button to my shapes. So I'll just go to the storyboarding tool and click the button. Sorry. Here's the button, and say, add to my shapes. Now I'm creating another template to be used later. So I have my button here. I'll change the name to Fabricum Web Button. And I can use it here again and again. So now every time I'll use a button in my storyboard, I'll use the same button over and over again. I don't need two, so I'll just delete it here. Okay, so I'll be saving the PowerPoint here, and now I'd like to get some to send it to my team. I'm updating the server, waiting for it to finish. Okay, so I have my we're waiting for it to save. Now, okay, so what I'm about to do, something I'm missing here, I'm sorry. You know, the demo gremlins. Here, storyboard link. I'm going to link it. I'm going to link that storyboard to a work item. So I'll just click link here and I'll choose link to, and I'm going to do shared queries and go to my product backlog. And let's select one of the product backlogs I have here, something that was assigned to Brian Keller, remember number 64, and I'll just do it. Okay, so I'll close and I'll save my PowerPoint in here and I'll just switch back to Internet Explorer and let's see what happens in my web access. So let's go to the TFS web access for our Fabric and Fiber and go and search for that item. I remember it was number 64, so I'll search for it. And now that I found it, okay, this is item 64, I can go to the Storyboards tab and see that I have a new storyboard attached to it. So I have a new item, and I have a storyboard attached to it. And you can see that this is the same. You can see here in the link, it's the same PowerPoint presentation I was creating earlier. So I'd like to request a feedback. So I'll just cancel this one and I'll go to request feedback. Here it is. Sorry, I just missed it. And then I'm going to write something. So I'm going to assign it to one of our stakeholders, Brian Keller. And I'm going to title it, I'm going to link it to our HTTP. Intranetfabricum.com. I'll explain a little bit. I can state more information. For example, use IE9 or higher for this one. I can tell. I'd like to provide more information on how to do that. So I'll write here. Go to the Intranet portal. Hopefully not making any typos here. Click on customer link and edit link for any customer. Okay, so I can preview that, but I'm not going to do that now. I'll just send it, and the email is out. So the next thing I'd like to do is, first, you can see that I have the feedback item created. It's number 80 now. So I can see that I have a new feedback, and I'll go to another RDP session I have here that I'm already logged in as Brian. Okay, this is Brian here. So I'm logged in as Brian, and let's see how things are working from Brian's point of view. Now, I don't have, this is a virtual machine, so I do not have an email server here, so I'll just go to the drop folder and grab that email just for the demo. Okay, here's the email. Okay, let's see the message details. It's everything I pointed out, and we would like to go to have your feedback. Go to the intranet portal, click on the customer link and edit link, and I'll just do start feedback session here. I'm Brian, and I can close the email now because I'm just starting the feedback session. Now, what I'm getting here is the is the feedback tool. And in the feedback tool, I have the information. The first thing is says that I need to use Internet Explorer 9 or higher, and a link. So I'll just click that and do next. So now I'll do exactly what I was told to do. I'm going to the customers, and I'll edit someone, and then I'll look at what I have here. Okay, this looks nice, but this is not exactly what I wanted because something is missing. There's no, I cannot update the phone information. So the phone number is not here, and I need to report that, so I'll just write here, we need to provide a way to update the customer phone number. Oh. Okay, so this is not enough. I'd like to add a screenshot. So again, as we did earlier, I'll just do here screenshot and okay, and I have this screenshot here created, and now I have all the information in my feedback. I'll rate it 4 because it's very close to what I need, but there's a small problem. It's not a 5, okay? It's what I want, but I need the phone number. And I'll click Next and submit it. So I submitted it, and let's close this session here. Okay. One moment. I'm sorry. I'm trying to remove this one. Oh, here it is. Let's close this session here. And now we're back being Annie. And see that we had feedbacks, and now we have our more feedbacks. So let's go to the feedback title. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm looking for it sometimes. Oh, here it is. Sorry. Yeah, you see that we had 2 feedbacks. Now we have 3. And now I'll go to the feedbacks. And I can see I have a few feedbacks here. One of them is from Brian Keller. This is the one that we would like to look. So let's go to this one. And when I click it, I can see... it's too small here. I'll try to have more views here. I have all the information that Brian was referring to me, everything including the screenshots. And I have all the links I have the original request. I have the attachment. I have every information I needed. Okay, so let's talk about quality afterthought impediment. Quality is not something that you can test into an application. It has to be built in. And, in modern development practices, we use testings as in order to detect problems as early as possible, and unit testing is one of the developer's first tool. Now, one of the biggest problems is that we as developers are people, and I have a few friends that say that we don't write code, we write bugs, and then we fix them and write more bugs. Okay, you do not write code. Now, in order to find these bugs, it's very important to find these bugs in time because unit test allows us to find these bugs as early as possible and see that we did not break anything. In Visual Studio 2012, the unit testing framework has always been something that we use in order to do that. In 2012, we have it's more extensible now, and we can use other frameworks of testing. For example, you can now JavaScript testing is fully integrated now with Visual Studio 2012, and it's not something that was written by Microsoft. So you can, and why is it important? Because you can now test, you can have a full solution of your system of even parts that are not written in C# or VB.NET. One of the major impediments is the ability to isolate functionality. And what we used in the past was mocking frameworks of all kinds. Visual Studio 2012 now enables has the strong fakes framework that allows us to. It's very powerful and allows us to isolate elements and simplify the isolation of business logic. Okay. Another issue I'd like to address now is unmet user expectations. So I talked about it earlier that customers do not always reflect customer intent. They do not always sure how to tell you what they need. That awkward moment where they say, okay, this is what I asked for, but not what I wanted. And we said that it's also not easy to express functional requirements. So in many teams, the testers are the people that are doing the tests have a great deal of domain knowledge. And most often manual testers are people that are former users, are users of the previous versions. So they know exactly what to look for, where to go, and how to find problems and usability problems. In Visual Studio 2012, we have exploratory testing that allows us to allows the user to create to just go and run the application. Find the usability problems and other problems, and create ad hoc and create actionable bugs that includes IntelliTrace information, other information. We'll see that, and then they can also create they can also create test cases. So these test cases can be used later in order to see that the problem doesn't persist. Because, you know, many times when we fix one bug, again, we're developers. When we fix one bug, we're re-raising other problems. So if I bumped into something, I'd like that to become a test case. And so when it's being fixed, it stays fixed. Moreover, one of the options that this tool allows us is more feedback, more connection with the customer. Again, because when they do that kind of usability testing, that kind of exploratory testing, they again can bump onto usability problems and other problems and show us, okay, it's not the storyboarding, it's exactly what you created, and I'm missing something here. And they create, again, they send us feedback, and we shorten the connection. We're connecting between the dev people and the test people. So in my next demonstration here, I'll show how the exploratory testing is being performed with Visual Studio 2012. Okay, so now we're going to log in as someone else. Let's log off as Annie here. Close this RDP in order to and log in as someone else. Let's do Adam. And I'm going to start the unit test manager, test manager. No, I'm not going to restart my machine here. Now, the Microsoft Test Manager allows testers to work with test plans with to author and organize manual tests. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to click Home and make sure that I'm on the correct project here. Okay, we're on Fabricum Fiber project. And I'll just click on add and create a new test here. I'll call it exploratory testing and add it. Okay, so Now I have my exploratory testing all set up. I'm going to click it and just say explore. What I get here is this start button saying, "Okay, recording. We're recording now." Let's go first for the settings screen here and see that. One of the things I can set up here is my audio device. This virtual machine is not capable of audio, so I cannot do that here, but if I would, I could record audio notations, okay, with my testing. One of the stronger options here. So let's start our session here and launch Internet Explorer, just as we did earlier. Now we're going to the Fabricum portal, and we'll do a few things here. Let's go to the tickets. Okay, so we're watching the tickets that are assigned to our Drew Robbins here, and let's take one of the tickets here, and let's see here. Okay, everything is okay. We can see I'm the tester. I'm the user of the former application, and I know what to look for. So I'm going in and notice that the created by and the assigned to fields are correct. Okay, so let's try to wreck it a little bit. I'll do edit, and everything is still okay. Okay, it's still okay, and I'll do save. Maybe I'll be able to wreck it, but no, it's still there. Okay, so I'll try to delete it. Let's delete it, and I get a delete confirmation screen. Oh, I found a bug. The created to and the assigned to fields are none. They should clearly state the correct information. So I found the bug. I'm going to report it. So the first thing I'll do is I'm going to write here what I found, created by, and assigned to fields are set to none instead of viewing delete confirmation. Okay. Again, I'd like to add a screenshot. So I'll do add screenshot, and I'll just use this. It's good enough. Okay, I got it. And the next thing to do is to do create bug here. Okay, now you can see here that one of the most powerful tools here is that I got the list of the things I did in order to get that. So I have the scenario. I go to the web page, I click ticket, and I click the link, and edit, and save, and delete, and here's what happened. So I have all the information now. I need a title here, so I'll just write, again, created by and assigned to, and assigned to fields are set to none. And I'll also set that bug to Julia. Okay, so I just assign it to Julia, and I save and create the test. So what I did here, I created the test. And now I can edit that. Now I'm also creating a test now. And the test means that next time I would like it to happen again. So the test means that I'd like you to confirm in the test, confirm that created to and assigned by fields are not set to none on when viewing delete confirmation. So that's the test already. And the expected result here, let's go here, and I'll set the expected result of when you click the delete link, I expect that the assigned to and created by fields should reflect, show the correct information. Now, this is not enough. I can edit the list here. So I'm going to add the list because one thing I wouldn't like the tester to do is to actually delete something because it happens on delete confirmation. So I'd like to write here important, do not click confirm delete. And notice that I can use the editing tools to bold it and to change the color. So I'll do it red. So now I have all I need, and I can save and close. I have a test case now. So I'm done for today. I'm going to do end testing. And in the summary, you can see that I have my new, this is the session I was doing, and I can see the bugs that I created. Here's the bug created to and assigned to fields are set to none. And I can see the notes that I have and the test cases that I created. So also I created both a bug and a test case. I'm sorry, it takes this time. One of the things I need to do here is to start another machine here, so we'll have it ready for later. Apply. Okay. Okay, so our next impediment would be Operational requirements are not met. I'm sorry, operational readiness requirements are not met. Okay, so we understand the customer intent and we create what they want, but we have to make sure that our application can scale up. Now, let's say that I developed my application and the application is meant for 5,000 users. I cannot test that for 5,000 users. I can only maybe do 5 here. The whole company is 10 people, for example, and we cannot test that. So oftentimes we find ourselves finding these problematic issues only at the customer site. We do not want that to happen. For example, our database is not up to scale. Our application server, our network bandwidth is not enough, etc. So with the Visual Studio when we create web tests that are used within load tests, we can bombard our system with as many users as many users. We can test our system with tens, hundreds, thousands, and even millions of users at the same moment. It just depends on our hardware. And what load testing can give us is we can find exactly the place where our system would break. We can identify that long before we deliver the system, and identify exactly if our hardware, if our software, if our application server, our database, if they're up to scale, and if it will fit the customer intention. So my next demo would show the web and load testing features of Visual Studio 2012. Hopefully my system here started already. Okay, let's do it full screen. Oh, I'm sorry. That's better. Let's do it full screen and log in as Julia. Okay, so I'm going to start Visual Studio here, and I'm going to use Visual Studio 2012 abilities to create web tests and then use them as load tests. So while we wait for Visual Studio, I'm going to create a new project here, and that project would be I'm going to do that from within Visual C Sharp. But it's not a must. You can do it from any other language, from VB.net. I'm just in my demo here. I'm not going to do coding, so it doesn't really matter. And I'm going to create a web performance test, and I'll change that to intranet tests. Oh no, I'm going to change that to intranet tests. And I'm creating my project here. The project is going to be created, and okay. So now I'm going to. Okay, now you can see that I have a small button here that says "Edit Recording." And when I do that, it would start recording from, it's a web test, it would start recording directly from Internet Explorer, and I'm going to click it. So before I do that, I'm going to create a new performance test here. Okay, add new performance test. And I'm going to record. I'm recording now. Now, what I'm going to record is what I do on my system here. So I'm going to my intranet portal, and okay, it takes some time. Okay, so I'm watching the tickets here, and I'll just I'm going to go to one of the tickets and edit it. Okay, I'm adding now. See what's happening here on the left side. All of the moves I'm making here are being recorded. We're not recording mouse clicks. We're not recording mouse moves. We're not recording keyboard. What we're recording really is these are the HTTP protocol movements. Okay, data going back and forth over the HTTP protocol. So we can then replay that on different scenarios, and you can do that for web services on advanced solutions. You can do that for web services. You can do that for anything that is HTTP for this one. So I'm going on and okay, I edit and I save, and let's go to the list of customers here. I'm doing quite a few things because I'd like to see how long it takes to do things. And let's go to the customer details of someone. And let's go back to the list. And that's done. Okay, so I'm done with recording and I stop. Now, Visual Studio now tries to make dynamic parameters out of my movements here. What Visual Studio is doing, it tries to find the things that I can change later in order to do different kind of tests. Let's say that I was deleting something. If I'll repeat that, the next delete would fail. So I'd like that to be a dynamic parameter and supply a list of items to be deleted when I do the performance testing, because I'm testing my ability to delete many items at the same time. So Visual Studio has just created my list here. As you can see, it's the list of the things I've been doing here. I've been calling the fabricum.com, and then I went to this one and then that. Now, one of the things I can do here is I can generate code from that, and that would create a coded UI. In coded UI, I will have the same list of steps, but I'll have them as code, as C# or Visual VB.NET code, and I'll be able to customize them even more. I'm not going to do that for now because this is not. Okay, so now I have the web test, and I created that in order to be able to run that web test many, many, many times. So I'm going to create a load test. I'm going to create a new load test. And I can change the scenario name, but for now I'm okay with scenario one, so I'll just click next here. And this is one of the most important things I can do here. What I can do here is define exactly how I would like to test my load. So I can define the number of users I'm going to start with, and the rate of adding more and more users up to the maximum users I'd like to test. I can put a very large number here, but since we're using a virtual machine here, I'll settle for 5 users going up to 50 users at a rate of 5 per second, 5 per step. Okay? Every 5 seconds, add 5 users until we get to 50. Okay, so here again, this is a very, very advanced feature. I can decide on how I'm going to test my system, but I'm sorry. Now I'm going to model the mix. I'm mixing the tests. I'm going to model them based on the total number of tests. But as you can see here, there are other options, and MSDN has offers a lot of information about these options. I'm going to settle for this one for now. And okay, so I'm going to add. What I'm going to add is web tests. So I have my new web test here that I created earlier. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't edit. Okay, so I added it to the mix. And my next step would be to define how am I going to test my system through the network. Because you might want to test in different scenarios. What happens when you have LAN? What happens when your users are coming from within 3G connections? So I'll just change the mix here. So now 10% of my tests would go through the LAN, 20 through 3G, etc. And now I also would like to test some other browsers. So what I'm looking for is to test Internet Explorer 9 and Internet Explorer 10. I'm not interested in Firefox. But I would like also to test out, simulate going through Chrome 2 and Firefox. And again, I can change the mix here. I'm not going to change the mix, but I could say try more through Internet Explorer 10. Okay, so I created my my mix here, and the and I'm going to finish. Okay, I'm going to do the load testing for about 1 minute because we don't have a lot of time. But notice the warm-up duration. Warm-up duration is used in order to allow your system. During the warm-up duration, the measurements are not being recorded. Because, for example, you'd like to have your database connections set up. You'd like to have your pages being compiled. You wouldn't like to measure that. So you set a warm-up duration. I'm not going to do a warm-up duration for this one. But now when I finish, you can see that I have all the information. Yeah, please. We're using network emulation. Okay. You can see that I have all the information here. I have a load test with one scenario, and that scenario we're going to test web test two. This is the mixes that I created. I have all the information. All I have to do here is just run it. So once I run it, take some time to prepare and start. And once I do. Okay, something is wrong. I'll try to. Fix that in a sec. It will take me a second. Okay, Visual Studio uses SQL Server database in order to save the results. And all the results are being saved between runs. So you have your results from different runs. You can run your test. You can, okay, then. Here it is. And maybe this would work. Okay, that's better. Hopefully it will work now. Let's run it now. Okay, we're in business. Okay, so you can see, as I said, Visual Studio is used to save the information, and you can go back and compare your runs between your previous runs. You can see that as it runs, I already get some very important information because I do not run for 1 minute. I usually run for 24 hours or more. And I can see the graphs here, and the graphs are very elaborate. There's a lot of information going on here. CPU and memory on the server, and how many tests failed, and how many tests are working, and all I need many metrics, a lot of metrics information that is being output here, and. Let's see that the amount of errors is in purple. We have quite a lot of them, as you can see here. This is not the machine that is cut out for testing. And once it's done, we have another second. Now it's saving the information to the repository. We have quite a few problems, as you can see here, because my test was failing. My load test was failing. My system is not up to it. My system is not up to what I'm doing. In parallel. Now, I have to think it through. Maybe it's a problem in the code. Maybe it's a hardware problem. Maybe I need more servers. Maybe I have race conditions. So if I'll go to the list of errors here, I can see the different errors that I had. This is one of the worst, null reference exception. This is a problem in my system, in my code. But I did have web test exceptions and socket exceptions because I was bombarding the system too much. Going back to the summary, you can see the graphs here, and I have quite a lot of information about the controller's page response time, which was quite good, really, and other key indicators that I can set up and change as I go. Okay, so moving forward to the next one, we'd like to ask what happens when we can't get the actionable feedback between the operations and the and back to the to the beginning of the cycle. What happens when we as developers do not know that something is wrong? When we find out too late that something is wrong, we wrote a bug because we write bugs, and we did not find that on time. Now, if the cycle is very long and we find about that bug too late, we might be writing very good code based on very poor foundations. And when we do find out about it, the frustration is very big because we're going to have to re-architect, redesign our code, rewrite our code. We're going to have to dig very deep into the source of our code because we made a very, we created the problem. So the solution to that is continuous integration. We need to be able to rebuild our system all the time. We need something, and Visual Studio 2012 allows us to do that, We need to be able to build as far as for every check-in. Every time I check in my code, I'd like it to be compiled with the rest of the code and see that I did not break anything and went home. And maybe I'd like to run the tests, list of tests to run and see that I did not break anything in the logic to find out as soon as possible that I did not create a bug. So we're going to see now the continuous integration demo. That's the last demo for today. If you don't mind, I have a power problem here. Yeah, sorry. Okay, so we're going to see the last demo for today. Guys, my power isn't working here, and my laptop is dying. Oh, I see why. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm good. I'm good. I connected it. And in this last demo, I'll log in again as Julia in order to create code. So Julia is a programmer. Oh, what am I doing? Yeah, maybe. I'm doing wrong here, guys. I know exactly what I'm doing wrong. I'm sorry. Oh. Yeah. So now that I'm logged in as Julia, I'll go to the Visual Studio and connect to the TFS. Now, TFS has been there for many years, but Visual Studio 2012 added much more information to our views of TFS. The Team Explorer is, once it would run, I'll be able to show you. I have a lot more information on Team Explorer. So hopefully before noon we'll be able to show that. Guys, this is what happens when you're using a virtual machine. I'm sorry.
Lunch is just beckoning us, eh?
Pardon?
Lunch is just beckoning us.
Yeah, I'm doing my best here. Come on. Okay, so, oh, here it is. You know, when you say that you're going to close, then it starts to work. Okay. Back here, and I'll go to Team Explorer. Now, you can see here, you may be able to see here, they have lots and lots of information here. So I'll go to okay, I'll go to my home here and make sure that I'm using my Fabricom fiber team, and I'm connected to the correct team. And when I go to builds here, you can see that I already have nightly build created. So I can create another one, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to use it. So I'll do edit build definitions. Now, one of the most important things I was trying to show you here is the trigger. You can see here on the left side the trigger screen, and you can see that there are five options to that trigger. Trigger means when do you want to run the compilation. So manual means do not run it, I'll do it by myself. Continuous means every time someone checks in something, run the compilation, compile the whole system. I'd like to know that they did not break anything. Rolling builds is more for cut out for for development teams where you do many check-ins in very short period of times, and so you'd like to accumulate these check-ins between builds. You wouldn't like to build on every single check-in. Get a check-in is one of the stronger tools. Not allowing developers to go home because your check-in will not be approved by the system if the compilation is not succeeded. So you do check-in my pending changes, and you will wait until the compilation runs. And if it runs and if it's okay, you'll be able to check in. If not, your check-in is. We do not want to have bad code in our system, in our TFS. And the last one is scheduling. Scheduling is based on your calendar. Maybe you would like to run a nightly build or whatever build on Saturdays and Sundays, or maybe you'd like to do it at 9 a.m. when everybody's in the office. So, okay, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to use continuous integration for this demo. And okay, so for the process options, you can see that once I did that, we first build a system. Okay, it's being built. And I'm waiting for that to happen. Okay, so if I'll go to, I'm going to save that, and I'm going to close that. Now I'm going to close the build definitions and just go and change something in my system. So I'll do file, recent projects, and go to the call center. And I'm going to go to the DAL and fix something because I'm not really confident with the code there. I'd like to make it better. So once I have it, I'll go to the DAL. It's still initializing, so we'll wait. And we have it. Okay. I'll go to the DAL here and to the models, and I'm going to change the address, okay? The address module here, I don't like this regular expression. I can make it much more complicated. So if I can, why not? Yeah, complicated is good, right? So now I'm going to I'm going to save my changes and check them in. So I'm doing check in here. Okay, and I'll write here complicated is better. Complicated is better. Okay. And I'm doing check-in. Now, if I'll go back home here, I'll notice in my builds that I have a new build running. You can see. Because I triggered build number 10 with my chain set. And now I can open that and go to the report. I'm trying to. Okay. And go to the report. Okay. And I have the report here with all the information that I need about the build. All the information about the build. Did it succeed? And all the and what happened. So consider that every time your user continuous integration, every time your user is checking in something, you're building the system. Consider that you can run the tests and see that they did not break the logic. And that's one of the most important things to find out very, very soon before they go home, before the weekend, before we deliver. So what we're trying to achieve here, and our aim here, is to remove all the barriers, to have all of the teams communicate with each other and have more information flowing between all of them. And once we have that, we have a better project. One last issue I'd like to emphasize is QC. Many companies still use QC, and they would like to use CFS. And in order to do that, they have two options: migration tools and sync tools. Well, for example, HPQC only synchronize bugs, and you have Juvander's tool that synchronize bugs and requirements. None of them, the QC itself exports. If you try to migrate, exports requirements to Excel or you find yourself writing your own solutions all the time. So in order to do that, we have a tool that is called Scrat, and that tool is it was developed by Cella. It gives you a full solution. It migrates everything. It migrates test cases and bugs and attachments and links and everything between the TFS and their interrelationship links. You can see that it's fully customizable fully mirrored migration. We can use reporting system to Excel, the Microsoft Excel. It supports multilingual projects. It was developed by Cella, which is a Microsoft Gold Partner, certified Gold Partner, and can be downloaded here, and supports the latest Quality Center versions 9, 9.2, 10, and 11.